Okay, Pentecost, of course, weekend has passed, and we are now in that period of time, the transition period, I call it, between basically our calling with God's Spirit and the time when the trumpet will sound, because that's the next holy day, the Feast of Trumpets. I came into the church keeping the Feast of Trumpets. It was the very first feast I ever came, that I ever kept, that is. I went to Ambassador College in 1962, and about September, I think the first weekend of September is when we had orientation. And later I discovered that there was a Day of Atonement about 10 days later, and I was very glad that trumpets started my feast day keeping, because it was a feast and not a fast. But for a kid that was unconverted, it was a good introduction to the church. But we are in that period of time where after God gives us his law, and of course there is the letter of the law, which simply means the law written on stone, when we use that term. And then there is the spirit of the law, which simply means God writes his spirit, same law, in our hearts and minds. But we are now being, I guess, in a testing period, you would call it, where God shows that after he gives us his Holy Spirit, now he is going to see whether we actually practice his way of life. I was reading in John, and I think we'll turn there to get started, although the sermon in itself in detail is not on righteousness, although I hope all sermons have something to do with righteousness. But it's interesting, when John was writing, and this was probably about in the 90 ADs, 1 John 3, verse 7 and 8, he said, little children, let no one deceive you. So deception was taking place about 60 years and before the time Jesus Christ ascended to heaven. Satan always tries to get in there, and for some reason, well, we know the reason, Satan was trying to deceive many that they didn't need to practice righteousness. And so when John writes, he just makes it very, very clear. He says, he who practices righteousness is righteous, for Christ is righteous and God is righteous. So, I mean, it's very practical. You can have the terms that are used in this theological Protestant Catholic world. Maybe I mentioned a couple weeks ago reading about Martin Luther and how the big change came with Martin Luther when he finally understood, based on Romans 3 and 4, that God imputed the righteousness of Christ to him. That's a Protestant theology. And that's why he said that James was not an apostolic book, is what he said. But you have the righteousness of Christ imputed to us, meaning we don't have to do anything, although they really, when it comes to their own wallet, they want others to, you know, follow certain laws, of course. But it is interesting that that no doubt was going around back in 90s AD. Well, Christ was righteous, and God has just imputed that righteousness to us. So he said, don't deceive yourself. He who practices righteousness is righteous. And that's the way, that's the bottom line. And if we sin, that's of Satan the devil. So we're going to go into one specific law today. I know we covered the laws in general, talked about the laws a lot, but this one is concerning a topic that we face every week. I received an email probably 5 days ago, and the email was, hello, Mr. Sergeant, I'll be in the area, I think it was, when are Sabbath services in Kansas City? So I thought, well, this is from a member traveling through. So I sent him the information. And he said, well, then a follow-up. And it was a little bit different because it wasn't just one message, but I got about five of the same messages at the same time. When are Sabbath services? Well, how early can I come? When are the doors open? And how late is it? Because I need to know that information. And so I said, well, the doors open around 1 o'clock, 1:30. Services begin at 2:30. And This week we have a potluck in the park after services, so we are going to be going and having a potluck meal nearby. So it's the door is closed, probably, whatever I said. So he writes back again, and it was under a certain name, so he writes back again, and he says, now when are services again? My other computer is not working well, and so I need to know again, when can I come, and when are services ending? He said, I need to adjust my schedule, see if I can adjust my schedule to come. And that all of a sudden is like, we're not dealing with a Sabbath keeper here. What is this about adjusting my schedule? And then I saw it was signed by a different name. The same person writing, but all of a sudden the same first name and a different last name. And I thought, this is highly unusual. And I got 6 messages the same. Did any of you send that to me? I don't think so. 6 messages, you know, within 1 minute of each other, 6 different messages. Do, 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 do. I suppose that can happen with a computer, but still didn't seem right, you know. But if it were just that, it would be no big deal. But I thought, what do I do? Father, keep us from the evil one. Protect us. Actually, I didn't write back. There was just too much there that I thought, if I write back, I'm just going to make a guy upset. I wrote back. I didn't send it. When I wrote back, I said, the Sabbath is from sunset Friday, because he wanted to know the schedule. It's from sunset Friday to sunset Saturday. So really, you don't need to adjust your schedule to anything. Just come to services when it's open, right? I didn't send it, but keep my wife safe. I thought, So sometimes you have to make choices. And that was just a choice I made. So I'll find out if I did the right thing or not. But, you know, sometimes you wonder, what do I do in this situation? This seems just so unusual. Well, it's about Sabbath observance. Ancient Israel really got into trouble over 2 things. One was idolatry, and the other was Sabbath keeping. Idolatry and Sabbath keeping, or the lack thereof. In Isaiah 58, it's interesting, this chapter, the whole chapter, is pretty much based around the subject of fasting. But at the end of it, verse 13, notice what it says, Isaiah 58 and verse 13. Because, you know, we fast, why aren't you listening? What is it with you, Father, that you are not listening? We fast. And so he explained how to fast. And then he ends by saying, verse 13, if you turn away your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy day of the Lord, honorable, and shall honor him, not doing your own ways, not finding your own pleasure, not speaking your own words, then you shall delight yourself in the Lord, and I'm going to cause you to ride on the high hills of the earth, and feed you with the heritage of Jacob your father. The mouth of the Lord has spoken. So that's how he ends the section on how to fast. They were having problems with the Sabbath. They were keeping the Sabbath in a way, but they weren't keeping it in the right way. I think it's in the first chapter of Isaiah where it talks about God says, I'm really fed up with the way you keep your Sabbath day. And many take that to say, well, God did away with the Sabbath. But that's not, of course, what he was saying. They were just not keeping the Sabbath properly. What is different about the Sabbath command, first and foremost? What is different about the Sabbath command? Well, first of all, we know that it's a period of time. The other commandments are not a period of time as such. We know the other commandments are all the time, of course, definitely. But this is a different commandment in that you have a period of time. In Genesis chapter 2, in verses 1 through 3, thus the heavens and the earth and all the hosts of them were finished, and on the seventh day God ended his work which he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had done. Now it is interesting that he rested on the seventh day, and we're going to take a look at that word also when it comes to keeping the Sabbath and what the word rest means. We do know that God was not tired in this case. How many of us? Well, none of us, thank God, was tired. But he rested. So what did he do? Did he regain strength? Did he pick up on some sleep that he missed? And we know, of course not. God doesn't sleep at all. But seventh, he ended his work. He did not do the same thing that on the Sabbath that he had did before. He produced something for 6 days. And on the seventh day, he didn't produce anything. Then God blessed the seventh day, set it apart, because in it he rested from all his work which God had created and made. He stopped making anything else is what he did. So it is a period of time. It's a whole 24 hours. And this commandment does not apply to the rest of the week, except God says, the rest of the week you can work, of course. But this commandment does not apply to doing something or to stop doing something the rest of the week, does it? So it's unique in that way, where all the other commandments are every single day you follow all the other 9 commandments. It's the first reference to a commandment right here in Genesis 2, very first reference. I think I told you the story, but I'll repeat it. It was after the feast this last year when I received an email from a kid that I knew back in San Antonio, Texas. And he said, hi, Mr. Sergeant. I haven't seen you for years, and it has been since 26 years ago. So he's probably 45, 46 by now. He was a teenager when we were down in San Antonio. And he said, how's the religious business? Then he called by his father by a derogatory name because his father's still in the religious business. Holy, whatever he called his father. And so I said, well, since you ask, I said, we're just finished keeping the Feast of Tabernacles, just home from keeping the feast. And he wrote back, and still into that sacrificial stuff, huh? And so, as you remember the story, if I told it, I wrote back and I said, how many days of the week do you keep? What kind of weekly cycle do you keep? Something to that order. I said, I suppose it's 7 days. And I said, why are you keeping a weekly cycle 7 days? I said, where is it that you can find that anywhere having to do with anything? Because you can't. 7-day cycle is not based on sun, moon, stars, at all. 7-day cycle, as we know, is just based on what God did. And he wrote back and he said, and he had mentioned he was into debate. He wrote back and he said, well, I'm not trying to get into religious discussion here. And I wrote back and I said, you started it. What do? I just pick up on it if he wants to do that. So I never heard from him again. I said, you're the hypocrite if you're saying that, nothing has to do with religion and you're keeping a 7-day cycle. Start keeping a 10-day and see what your employer says. I came in on Saturday and Sunday. Where were you? Why is the business closed? Anyway. It's a special covenant. It's another unique thing about the Sabbath day. It is a special covenant. When you go to Exodus chapter 31, and we know, of course, in Exodus 20, you have the Ten Commandments that were given to Israel as something that they hadn't had for a while. Exodus 31, starting out in verse 16, therefore the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath to observe the Sabbath throughout their generations as a perpetual covenant. It is a covenant. It is a sign. Now, even though the Ten Commandments were the covenant. It was a covenant. The Ark of the Covenant contained the 2 tablets of stone. And so if anybody ever asked, and I know I was asked this question in 1994 when I got a visit, well, you do know that the Old Covenant was the 10 Commandments. And I said, well, yes. And I kind of threw the guy because he expected me to say no. No, the Ark of the Covenant had the two tablets of stone. And according to the New Testament in Hebrews 9, you got a couple other things added in. That's questionable. They were beside the ark for sure, that they were there. They were added, according to Galatians. But whatever the case, we see that not only are the Ten Commandments a covenant, it's a special covenant to have the Sabbath, a special covenant. Verse 17, because it is a sign between me and the children of Israel forever. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed. Now, you can look that one up too, but you know that he didn't get too tired, for sure. So, it is a special, perpetual covenant is what it is. And I don't see that with any of the other commandments. You can't find that with the subject of stealing. It is a special covenant now that I'm making with you not to steal. So those people who say, well, you know, oh, we are worshiping the Sabbath day. And it's like, no, I've never worshiped the Sabbath. How many of you have laid down, you know, before the Ten Commandments and you kind of highlighted that, you put it before you and you kneeled down and you said, oh, Sabbath day. We've never done that. We just never have worshiped the Sabbath day. We don't steal, and nobody says you are worshiping the commandment on don't steal. Has anybody ever told you that? You are worshiping the commandment on don't steal. So we just get practical with them, get down to earth with them, because they're starting to philosophize is what they're doing. Okay, so it's a special covenant. And number four that I have here on a difference, and you can come up with more, but it's one of those weightier laws demanding the death sentence if you break it. If you steal, that doesn't demand the death penalty. Idolatry, that demanded the death penalty. Even striking your parent, pretty rough if you struck them, but if you dishonored them, that wouldn't be the death penalty. And if you commit adultery, that's a death penalty in the Old Testament. So it goes along with those weightier ones. If you can make a difference. And some choices, as was mentioned in the sermonette, have a greater effect on your life than other choices. So those are four that we have here. How does God want us to keep the Sabbath? How does God want us to keep the Sabbath? Stealing, and I'm using that kind of as a comparison, I guess we would say. Stealing is self-evident. And from the time our kids are small, we know what stealing is. If they steal something that their sibling has, it's stealing. And we can tell them, this is stealing. It's something you don't do. Many of us probably, when we were young, maybe 3 years old, walked through stores, grabbed something, it looked good. We grabbed it. We took it home. Our parents found it. And they said, oh, no, this is stealing. You can't do that. And my brother had to take something back when he was 3 years old and give it to those five and dime. You remember those five and dime stores years ago? How many remember five? How many don't remember five and dimes? I'm looking at the kids, actually. Five and dimes. There's no such thing. It's 20s and 40s now. This is a 20 and 40 store. But it was stealing, and there was no question. This is not yours. You've taken something that is not yours. You have to give it back. So with the Sabbath, there's a definition that needs to be given to know whether we are keeping the Sabbath properly. We have to go by a definition. So we must define, and it's actually no, we must not define. God actually defines and explains the fourth commandment. And there basically is five words that we can take a look at here, and one is a phrase that gives us understanding. So we'll go to Exodus 20 at this time. Exodus chapter 20. Exodus 20, Ten Commandments are being given. This is not the first time, of course, Sabbath is brought up, because we know they were introduced in Exodus 16 to manna, And that certainly had to do with the Sabbath. So before these commandments were given, and that could be kind of something you would say would be number five that is different, that before the Ten Commandments were given to them, they were told about not going out and picking up all their food, shopping for the whole day. You know, they will get double on Friday. They don't have to go out and go to IGA or Hy-Vee or whatever it is and shop for all their food. So Exodus 20, here it tells us, and you'll pick up the five words slash phrases here, Exodus chapter 20, and we start out in verse 10. Well, start out in verse 9, I'm sorry. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. The seventh day is the Sabbath. Now, not something new from God's point of view. This was there from creation. Seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God, and it is the Sabbath of God. It is not somebody else's Sabbath. It is not our Sabbath. You remember the story when Mr. Armstrong was asked by the woman in the Bible study, I think it was up in Eugene, Oregon, Mr. Armstrong, is Saturday your Sabbath? No, not at all. Oh, I'm so glad to hear that. Remember the story? Some of you may not remember. So glad to hear that, because I've heard that people have told me the Saturday is your Sabbath. He said, no, it is God's Sabbath. Oh, it is God's Sabbath. And of course, we always say it's God's feasts. All of the feast days are God's. But notice it is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. He's the one who rested on the Sabbath day. In it you shall do no work. Okay, so there's a phrase, no work. We don't work. And that's a definition of what is not to be done on the Sabbath day. No labor. You are not going to go out and produce like you do the rest of the week. And I'm not going to be able to go to all the scriptures today, but I'll just make mention of when it comes to a Sabbath rest, that the land is not producing. Now, the land is always there and it's always resting. It's not going anywhere, right? So it's not. In the wintertime, actually, it's not laboring too much at all during the entire season. Maybe some stuff going on under the ground there with the little bugs, you know, and the breakdown of soil. So we understand those points. But when it comes to a Sabbath rest, it's a year where it's not producing. It's basically what's happening with the Sabbath rest. And if you have a garden, by the way, it is still a law that you have to give rest to your land for it to produce really well. In Montana, by the way, because of the 1934 drought, they came up with strip farming. And so every other year you have a strip of land that is rested. Nothing is produced. They might put something in it, but they turn it back into the soil. Sometimes they do that. So It's self-building, basically. But the actual law is you don't sow anything on that soil. And actually, the law is, too, if it produces anything, you don't even gather from what it naturally produces. We were talking about that the other day, but sometimes we forget, well, could you eat of a tree if it produced something? Well, no, you just let the stuff fall to the ground, and it goes back to the ground and basically is fertilizing your ground. I hear chicken feed is really good too, to fertilize, but whatever. So it says, going on. So that's the key. That's one of the keys here. No work. Okay. In it you shall do no work. Your son, your daughter, your manservant, your maidservant, your cattle, your stranger who's within your gates in 6 days. Now, the stranger who was within your gates was in a national confine. This was Israel. This was an area they had control by law of everyone who came into the land. A little bit different from today, isn't it? Where if somebody's visiting your house, you know, and they stay overnight and they, you know, they're not going to work in your house, right? they're not going to work in your house. You're not going to hire them to work on that day in particular. But the point is, in all of this, with the nation of Israel, you had control. So whatever you have control of, they're not going to work. Okay, 6 days, no work. You, son, daughter, maidservant, cattle, stranger. And now it goes back to what? It goes back to creation. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and rested the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. Now what you have here is Sabbath. The word Sabbath, it's Shabbat. C-H-A-B-B-A-T. And you have the word rested. We're going to come to that in a moment. But he rested on that day. And that word actually is very similar to Shabbat. Very similar to Shabbat. And it's very important, if we're going to keep the Sabbath correctly, that we understand what Shabbat means. And also, he hallowed it. That's holy. That's another word, hallowed. So it's holy. And we're going to pick up another word here in a few moments that is not here, but somewhere else. You have Sabbath rest, it's holy, and there's no work. And that's in Exodus 20, verses 10 and 11. Now, when you come to Exodus 16, well, excuse me, Leviticus 23, we'll go there first. Leviticus chapter 23. One other thing that we can pick up from this, and that is in starting out in verse 3. Well, let's go ahead in verse 2. Speak to the children of Israel, the feasts of the Lord which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations. What is the first thing out of God's mouth? Holy convocations. The feasts of the Lord which you proclaim to be holy convocations, these are my feasts. 6 days shall work be done. The seventh day is a Sabbath of solemn rest, a holy convocation. So you have 6 days work and no work on this. You shall do no work on it. You have Sabbath, you have holy, and you have convocation. So what is holy? Well, it's a holy day and it's a holy convocation. So you have all of those words now. So when we take a look at Sabbath, we want to think about how we keep the Sabbath day. Sabbath, it's a Shabbat. It is named that. The Sabbath is named for the whole 24-hour period. And for those who get really detailed, like I do sometimes, it's 23 hours, 59 minutes, and 10 seconds sometimes, or it's 24 hours, 1 minute sometimes. But we know what we mean, right? Sunset to sunset. So it's a Sabbath, it is a rest, it is holy, it's a convocation, and there's no labor. Okay, so what we're going to take a look at today is the four areas when it comes down to practically keeping the Sabbath. We're going to look at employment, which is pretty much an easy one. We're going to look at fatigue, Sabbath, or just fatigue, six-day fatigue, we'll call it. We're going to look at unconverted relatives, which all of us have had to deal with. Every year in our case, we've had to deal with it. Every time we go up to see the relatives, or often we have to deal with it. Unconverted relatives and what they're doing. And the closer you are to unconverted relatives, the more conflict there can be with the Sabbath, right? And then children. This has come up, I know, in Kansas City in 3-4 months ago. So we'll take a look at those four things. Number one, employment. Number one, employment. Exodus 20 says no labor, no work. So we cannot produce, we cannot be gainfully employed on the Sabbath day. Applies to us. Now, in the world, they're going to be working all the time. We have no control over them. In the United States, there's no law, except in New Jersey, where there's a blue law. when we lived in New Jersey, we found that there were still blue laws back in 1989, 90, 91, all the way through 94 when we left, that if you have your car out in the driveway and you're changing the oil, you're going to get a fine. Because it's on Sunday, that is, on Sunday, excuse me. Sunday, because you are breaking the Sabbath. Now, I don't know how many places in the United States that still is, and I don't know if they've overturned it. Certainly if they've picked up on abortion and picked up on gay marriage, why would they keep that blue law? You know, you can go ahead and abort your child, but don't change oil on Sunday. Well, God calls Israel a hypocritic nation, doesn't he? So it wouldn't be surprising that they still have that type of thing going on. So on Sunday, you just couldn't do it. Now, I don't know if the policeman would really fine you, but that law was still in effect. Some areas, I think it was in Virginia, that you cannot take a bath in your front yard. There's some laws on the books that are really funny if you want to go to laws. So God says, no labor. You're not to produce. Now, if your ox falls in a ditch, what do you do? Well, it's interesting what God has said, that it's the ox, first of all. The ox is, I believe, one of the most sure-footed animals that you can find. The ox is rarely going to fall into a ditch. It's like these pictures. It reminds me of going to kill sheep in the mountains, you know, the bighorn. And you see pictures of them standing on the precipice looking down 10,000 feet and they're standing there like this. And it's like, ah, I would never do that. I get about this far away if there's a drop. Now, I'm not afraid of heights. I'm afraid of falling. And so I don't even get close, not even close. So anyway, with the ox in the ditch, it's just rare. It is so rare, it's just not going to come along. Your ox would rarely fall into a ditch. It's one of those where your ox is in danger of dying. So you're going to pull it out, and it's not going to take all day. It isn't going to take all day. It might take another couple ox to pull that ox out, so you may yoke a couple together and, you know, throw a noose around part of the other ox and pull it out, but it's going to be out fairly quickly. If you're driving down a road and you see somebody's house burning, would you say that's an ox in the ditch? And the answer is sure. Man, you're going to stop in a moment, and you're going to, if you could, run into a house to save someone, you'd do it. On the Sabbath day, you'd do it. So we understand those situations that are so rare. Rarely happens. I've never gone by a burning house on the Sabbath day. I never have. But there's no doubt oxes in the ditch. I know that Doc, who is a dentist, told me there's only been rare occasions in 38 years as a dentist that he had to go in because it was so bad. It was so rare that that happened. Was it? Did he say 3-4 times, maybe over 38 years? Other than that, it was taking ibuprofen and I'll see you tomorrow or I'll see you tonight. He would go in after the Sabbath if it were. But, you know, people go, it's interesting, and I've seen this. People will go for days and all of a sudden, they knew it was coming. It's like what I read yesterday. This person has trouble with this violent man. This guy's writing. He's a psychologist, psychiatrist, actually. He's writing about the women who marry violent men. They're violent, and he said they knew that they were violent before they married. Well, if your tooth is hurting Friday morning, and often it is, well, I'll just wait it out. Well, I'll wait until the Sabbath starts, and then I'll call Doc. Now, that's not what goes through their mind, but that's the way it happens sometimes. It's hurting for 2 days ahead of time, and you don't call. So take an aspirin and go to bed. So we understand those ox in the ditch situations. We do. So employment is rare. It's a rare. There was Katrina that hit the hurricane, and we had people who worked with the electrical company because of hospitals down, you know, no electricity at all. They went, worked the whole day on getting the lines going. Problem with this one guy is he worked for 3 months on the Sabbath. That was a problem. All of a sudden, there's no emergency, and he kept working. We don't do that. Emergency is emergency. You know, you have a life-threatening, you're going to help out, certainly. Okay, so you have employment. Now you have fatigue. That's another area. And this is quite interesting because when you get into the fatigue situation, you got to know what the word rest means. We all have to. All of us have had weeks, including myself, where just don't want to go the circuit again. I remember when we were in St. Louis, and we had Columbia, and then we had Kansas City also. And I remember waking up one morning. It doesn't happen very often, but it's like, I don't want to go. I just don't want to go. Now, with fatigue, there's a lot of things we can do because there is a Sabbath preparation. Technically, Sabbath preparation applies to the annual feast days. But there's Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday night that you don't have to go to bed too late. Don't have to. Sometimes the job dictates, just the way the job is, that you're only going to get a little bit of rest, and there's nothing else you can do. There are times like that. But did you know the word rest in the Bible is not about physical rest as such? If you look it up. Now, it's interesting, and this is an analogy here. Did you know if you're going to run a marathon and you miss sleep, you get about 4 hours sleep, and you got a marathon to run, you're going to run 26.2 miles. Do you know what that lack of sleep is going to do to hinder your time in the marathon? None. There's no hindrance whatsoever. You're not going to be hindered. Your time is going to be just as good. If you miss sleep, your time is going to be just as good. It's not going to affect at all. Now, the people who miss sleep 4 hours, you know, only 4 hours, do you think they show up for the marathon? Guess what? They all show up for the marathon. They don't say, I only got 4 hours sleep last night. I'm not going to run this marathon. They all run the marathon. Nobody stays home unless they cut their foot off going there. They don't. They run that marathon. Why? They've trained for it. They've done it, and they're going to do it. It's just the way it is. So physical rest. Let me go into this word here. It's only the word rest, from what I gather, is only mentioned 6 times. And here's what God says. If we go to Leviticus 23, so let's go there. I think maybe we're there anyway. That's where my Bible ended up from 5 minutes ago. If you look at this word in verse 2, the feast of the Lord, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations, these are my feasts. 6 days shall work be done, but the seventh is a Sabbath of solemn rest. Okay, now that word rest is Shabbaton. Shabbat, S-H-A-B-B-A-T with an H-O-W-N. That's what the word rest is. And it doesn't apply. I don't know if you can find any word in the Bible elsewhere that's talking about physical rest, but this one is not on getting, you know, caught up on your rest. It has nothing to do with that. You go into this word and you see that, well, we'll just take the word rest here only. It's only used 6 times, as I mentioned. And in all those 6 times, I'll go through them. Exodus 16, it's a rest of the Holy Sabbath. Exodus 31 and verse 15, where we were. The Sabbath of rest. Exodus 35, 6 days, and then a Sabbath of rest. Leviticus 16, it's a Sabbath of rest. And then in Leviticus 23, where we are. And then you have the land Sabbath. That's it. So, what does it say in Leviticus 23 here? Verse 3. 6 days shall work be done, but the seventh is a Sabbath of solemn rest, a holy convocation. So you know what it's telling us? It's a day you don't work, you don't produce. Instead, it's a holy convocation. That's what it's saying. You don't rest on that day. You do rest on that day, excuse me. You rest from producing work. So there's a difference between catching up on sleep and producing something. And this word rest is not, it's been such a busy week. No, it's replaced with holy convocation. So the no labor, when you do not labor, you replace it with a holy convocation. Now if you have sick kids, okay, we understand why we stay at home. We understand why we stay at home. But this fatigue thing is not there in the Bible, brethren. It's not there. It is just not there. If you're really tired, Sunday is for your rest. Sunday is your day of rest. Sunday. That's the first day of the week. Okay? Really? Unless, and maybe it's Wednesday where you have to catch up on sleep, but that's not what the Bible says at all. You're really, 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 really tired. Get up and go to services because you can go home and go to sleep. It's a 24-hour day. And sometimes I think we really get confused on that way. If you're sick, if we're sick, we stay home. You make the judgment. You have to make the judgment, you know, and you have to know whether it's, I'm just tired, that's all. I'm just tired. But just tired is not good enough at all. How would you like to be in Africa and walk 5 miles to church? Now you're tired, right? You're really tired. So I'm just pointing out that the labor is replaced by holy convocation. The producing of whatever goods is replaced by the holy convocation. Now, in Leviticus 23, let's take a look at what it says here when it says holy convocation. Leviticus 23 and we started out in verse 2, feasts of the Lord, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocation. So all the feasts are holy convocations. Then in verse 3, 6 days, we covered that, holy convocation. Verse 4, feasts of the Lord, holy convocations. First day, verse 7, holy convocation. Verse 8, seventh day, holy convocation. Verse 21, holy convocation. Verse 24, seventh month, first day, Sabbath, holy convocation. Do you think there's anything about all of this that tells us what the Sabbath is all about? Holy convocation. Verse 27, tenth day, when you're fasting. Oh, I'm fasting today. I'm really weak. Holy convocation. Now, if a person is feeble, they're not going to be attending services in a feeble condition. We understand the elderly, brethren. So God is not like this tough guy, and we're going to bring all the beds in from the rest home today. We all know that, don't we? I'm talking about healthy people that are young, under 93, but I think we all understand. God does not place on any of us laws where we make it harder, okay? We don't make it harder. That's not God's point. So, you know, if you're far away from a place and you can't keep a holy convocation because it's too far, well, we understand that. We fully understand that. There are times that you, because you're sick, if it's sickness, well, we stay home. We do stay home. We don't want anyone to lower their immune system. We don't want anybody to die because they come to Sabbath services. That's not the point. We're only talking about this one thing. Now, should we get extra rest on the Sabbath day? Can we get extra physical rest? The answer is absolutely. Sure, we can. There's no doubt. Can you get an extra hour of sleep on the Sabbath day? Well, sure, that's not a problem. Can you get an extra couple hours of sleep on the Sabbath? Sure. Are you going to sleep for 24 hours on the Sabbath? Not normally, but extra rest is fine. There's nothing wrong with it. But if it's just fatigue, then we can make up for it elsewhere. During the week, we often, you know, go to work whether we don't feel like it or not. You know, we are tired and we still go to work. Okay, so you go on. Verse 35, Holy Convocation. Verse 36, it's a Holy Convocation. Verse 37, these are the feasts. Verse Holy Convocation. So anyway, basically we're replacing productive labor with Holy Convocation. Okay. I went to Montana after my freshman year, and in Haber, Montana, Chinook, Montana, Malta, Montana, Great Falls, Montana, and Billings, Montana, there was no Holy Convocation. There was nowhere I could go. But it is interesting, coming into the next one, unconverted relatives. When I went to Montana, I was keeping the Sabbath, of course, at college, and I went to Montana, and there were unconverted relatives, and the pressure was on. I was the only one. There was nobody else. And I saw myself after a week starting to let up on keeping the Sabbath. I could see that I was being influenced. And God thankfully took me out of that environment because of the antagonism that was there. But it is really tough when there's only relatives around who don't understand you're keeping the Sabbath. They don't like you to keep the Sabbath at all. So when it comes to unconverted relatives, we have to be really careful. I call it the Nehemiah syndrome. If we go to Nehemiah 13, verses 23 through 26. Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther, Job, okay? Nehemiah 13. And what we find here in verse 23 is, in those days I saw Jews who had married women of Ashdod and Ammon and Moab. Now, that wasn't the biggest problem. That was not the biggest problem. It's what those women led their mates to do. Half of their children spoke the language of Ashdod and could not speak the language of Judah. Now, that was a problem. But spoke according to the language of one or the other people. So I contended with them, and be thankful that we don't have Nehemiah around today. This is not the way we do it today at all. So if any minister comes and pulls your hair and tells you Nehemiah is my example, to tell them that if they can go back in Nehemiah's time. They can get away with it back then. I contended with them, cursed them, not taking God's name in vain, I would think, struck some of them and pulled out their hair. Man, this guy was just as like, I'd say that's a burden. Now, that's the reason not to come to services if he's going to do that every week, right? But anyway, he made them swear by God, saying, you shall not give your daughters as wives to their sons, nor take their daughters for your sons or daughters. Did not Solomon, the king of Israel, sin by these things? Yet among many nations there was no king like him who was beloved of God. And God made him king over all Israel. Nevertheless, unconverted women, pagans in this case, caused him to sin. So that was the problem. That was the main problem. That's why he says, don't drink too much. You know, Greg, don't drink before you give a sermon. You know, do not take two shots of whiskey. Is there anything wrong with two shots of whiskey? Well, maybe not at other times, but not before you give a sermon. Instead of slaying Goliath, you're going to kick the out of him. if you're drinking, you hear the story, you know. The guy that had a swig of gin, I think, while he was preaching. No, there are certain things that you don't do so you don't sin. And they were not to sin. They were not to marry the pagan women because it was going to cause them to sin. And of course, the children, you see what happened there. So the biggest problem in all of it was marrying someone who was going to cause you to sin. That was the big problem. So, and what were they doing? Well, the story before this is that in those days, verse 15, I saw in Judah some people treading with presses on the Sabbath. They were producing goods on the Sabbath day. They were bringing in sheaves. They were loading donkeys with wine and grapes and figs and all kinds of burdens which they brought into Jerusalem on the Sabbath day. And I warned them about the day on which they were selling provisions, men of Tyre. And it goes into detail. He said, why do you profane the Sabbath day? And then he talks about Israel profaning the Sabbath. And then you had some bringing their goods before dark, and these would have been also the Gentiles. After this, it no doubt was not the Jews who were doing this, but the Gentiles would come up to sell their goods. And he said, look, you don't go shopping on the Sabbath day. You don't go and get your week's supply, or in the case of manna, you don't go out and buy your day's supply either way. So they were to cleanse themselves. So unconverted relatives, we have a Thanksgiving at our house. And every Thanksgiving, we have relatives there. And we always go to services. Just because the relatives are there, you don't stay home. And you might say, well, you're the preacher. You have to go. But when we went to Las Vegas one year, the Sabbath service was there, and you go to services. You know, they don't like it at all, but you go to Sabbath services. It was right in town. It was probably 10, 15, 20 minutes away, and you attend Sabbath services because it's a holy convocation. Now, when we have unconverted relatives, they can throw all types of stuff at us because especially if they're around, if they're nearby, you've got reunions, you've got parties, and it's like, are you going to let the unconverted relatives interfere with your holy convocation? And the answer is, well, no. No, it's a holy convocation. And if they have a party, why can't they have the party on Wednesday? Why can't they have the party on Sunday? Well, because it's a day that is their party, that's their day. How many of you have kept your anniversary on other days? And my wife raises her hand because our anniversary has fallen on camp week. And it is touching Holy Grail not to keep it on June 26th. If we don't keep our anniversary on June 26th, that's a major problem, isn't it? The answer is no, it's not at all. Marion has never, ever complained at camp because for year after year after year, we kept it another time. We can keep an anniversary. You know, the steak is just as good. The wine is just as good. My wife is just as converted. On 2 days after that, if we keep it July 28th, I'm going to get in trouble here. It's June 26th. Well, maybe a month and 2 days, but we kept our 40th anniversary, a special trip, our 40th anniversary on our 41st anniversary. Or was it our 42nd? It was our 43rd. So 3 years later. So then I lost my wife over it. So how big a deal is it if someone delays something one day? May not be able to delay something, you know, that comes once in a lifetime, like a wedding. May not be able to delay a wedding. We've had those situations. So a once-in-a-lifetime wedding, you can't delay, you know. If your relative is going to get married, you don't have too much choice over that. Those are understandable things. But regular annual parties and Thanksgivings and holidays, the Angerluths were here last week, and there was a reunion over there. It was a two-day reunion, and they came to Sabbath services. So the family knows. I don't know if you know the Hungerloots. They're from Cincinnati. But they showed up at Sabbath services, and then they went back to the party. There was one who didn't like it, but that was just the way it was. A lot of times you don't know your relatives that well, and you don't have enough to talk about, nothing to talk about, so your absence of 3 hours isn't going to hurt anything. Okay, well, the final one is, besides unconverted relatives, I've got this one, Sam's kids, Eli's kids, and Aaron's kids. Samuel's kids were a problem. Eli's kids were a problem in the Bible, and Aaron's kids were a problem. Just because we're converted doesn't mean, or in a high position like Aaron, the high priest, it doesn't mean that the kids are going to follow along the way. The kids don't often understand just the way it is. I had someone call or email me, I think it was, it wasn't too long ago, but it was, my son has this project at school, and he has to go in on Saturday. We didn't realize that, but he has to go in on Saturday, and he has to be there and show this project. So I told him a story of what happened with our daughter back in San Antonio in probably about 1986. She was chosen as the one to represent her school in an address that she would make. And it came down to it where she took the dress in on Friday, and she said, well, I can't model this dress because it's a Sabbath. And they said, if you can't model it, we're not even going to judge it. And, of course, that's heartbreaking because it was hours and hours and hours. She had been the one picked for that school. And this guy was pretty mean-spirited, and I was there and I explained to him, look, this is the Sabbath day, and it's a religious thing that she believes in. And he was not nice at all. And so I said, Lena, you know, God makes up for this. He always does. He always blesses us for keeping the Sabbath. So the next year they chose her again. Same thing. And they knew that she wouldn't be able to go on the Sabbath, but the school wanted her to do it. So next year she took it in on Friday, and the same guy said, look, he said, I know it's your Sabbath. We're going to set up a special day on Sunday for you. We're going to have all the judges meet with you personally, and we're going to have you model it. And it was like, this is the same guy as last year. It was the same mean-spirited guy. And so she modeled it, and she won. It was a big lesson to our daughter. It really was a big lesson. So over in Kansas City, it was, well, what do I do? I told him that story. Told him the story, and I don't know what he did. You know, I never heard one or the other. He was asking for my advice, and I said, it's a Sabbath, it's a holy convocation. It's what it is. So we have here in Exodus 20, it says, neither our son nor daughter. If it interferes with holy convocation, it's a major problem. With our relatives, it's just rare that we would not be keeping the Sabbath. Exodus 13, verses 7 through 9, Exodus 13, and I referred you to Exodus 20 just because we already read that. I won't go back to it. Exodus 13, verses 7 through 9. Notice what the kids were asking about the days of unleavened bread. You know, why are we keeping these days of unleavened bread? You should tell your son in that day, saying, this is done because of what the Lord did for me when I came up from Egypt. It shall be as a sign to you on your hand and as a memorial between your eyes, that the Lord's law may be in your mouth. We teach our children what God's law is. In this past week, on Life, Hope, and Truth, they focus in on just one article often. And in the last 3 days, and this is where I picked this up, there is one on parenting advice by Mark Winner. And it has to do with our children. And I thought I would read it to you. You can go and read the whole article. I'm not going to read it, the whole thing, but it says, a child-centered home is one in which the primary motivation for everything that is thought, taught, and done in the home is focused on the children and what they want or need. And after all, the Bible teaches that we should love others as we love ourselves, so if we're trying to shower our children with love and attention, isn't that not only good but godly? Then the next subhead is the God-centered home. It is true that God teaches us to love one another as we love ourselves, but he also teaches that there is something that comes ahead of that command. Jesus said, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. That's the first and great commandment, Matthew 22, verse 37 and 38. If we think about it carefully, we should begin to see a problem with the child-centered home. God commands that we seek him first in everything we do, including our families. Rather than child-centered, where life revolves around our children, our families should be God-centered. That means everything that is thought, taught, done should be founded on our love for God and following his instructions. Putting God-centeredness to the test is the subheading. So let's consider an example. And I thought this was good, especially since I'm giving the sermon today. Let's say your child comes to you and wants to participate in youth soccer. You're fine, willing to take him to and from practice and games. You want him to be a good parent. You want to be a good parent. Provide him with healthy, fulfilling activities. He wins a spot on the team. Practices begin that next Sunday. You know, if you have kids in track and they can go to state and it's on Saturday and they are a top runner in the state, now what do? It's a Sabbath. It is a Sabbath. So you've got a soccer game going here. So you now have to make a choice. Do you allow him to play the games on God's Sabbath, Exodus 28 through 11, or do you hold to the practice and belief of your family and put God first? Your choice is between following the will of God or giving in to the will of your child. Whether you have a child-centered family or God-centered family will determine the decision that we make. What do we choose to do? And the key, again, then he goes on with, this is the final subhead on this section. The key is make sure that we don't compromise with what God teaches. And we teach our children, in this case, about the Sabbath, because this is the example that is given. So it is very important when our kids are 18, they're going to make their own choices. And if we make the Sabbath a delight, that is going to be helpful. With our unconverted relatives, I hope we don't choke them with our Sabbath keeping. We just keep the Sabbath. You know, there's a difference. They might be turned off by our self-righteousness, and that would be bad. But they're not going to be turned off with our Sabbath keeping if it leads to. And I can tell you for sure that my mother knew I was going to go to hell. That may have been for things I did before starting to keep the Sabbath too. I don't know, but my parents knew. But you know, what turned my parents was not only my attitude, my wife's attitude, but also just the kids, the way they acted, their respect toward their grandparents, their attitude. They were involved in everything in school that they could be involved in. They were successful. And it was a way of life that turned my parents. Of course, we shoved our baby into my mother's hand as soon as we could to get her focused on the grandkids and not us. But it's a way of life. And if we come across as self-righteous, that I'm better than you are, then this is not the way of life that we present. So we don't work on the Sabbath. We don't let others influence us on the Sabbath. And we don't let our fatigue get to us concerning not keeping the Sabbath. So that's the definition, and there are judgments, of course, to be made that you and I have always had to make. Those judgments will come up. It's, again, rare that you would ever, ever not go to a convocation that is holy. But again, there are those rare judgments that come along, and they're not a regular annual, most of the time it's just not an annual thing that happens. So I hope that helps us with one of the laws of the Bible, a covenant that God made with us, very special time, a holy time, And I hope that that helps us define the Sabbath, how we and our family keep the Sabbath.